Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For this month's Full Bio, we've been discussing the book Anna the Biography by Amy O'Dell. Now 72 years old, her official title is Global Editorial Director of Vogue, as well as Worldwide Chief Content Editor for Condé Nast. There are many myths and some truths about how Wintour runs her office. Both were captured in two films. The 2009 documentary, The September Issue, chronicles what it takes to produce Vogue's labor-intensive and financially important fall issue that comes in often at several hundred pages. And then there's the narrative film, The Devil Wears Prada, based on a hit book written by a woman who was once an assistant at Vogue. The film stars Meryl Streep as the icy, domineering editor Miranda Priestly, who terrorizes those in her work orbit in the name of producing an excellent magazine. Now, this scene from the film is a classic. It's where Miranda dresses down a fish-out-of-water assistant who has a little bit of a contempt for fashion.
Something funny?
No, nothing's, it's just that both those belts look exactly the same to me. You know, I'm still learning about this stuff and,
This stuff? Oh, okay, I see. You think this has nothing to do with you. You go to your closet and you select, I don't know, that lumpy blue sweater, for instance, because you're trying to tell the world that you take yourself too seriously to care about what you put on your back. But what you don't know is that that sweater is not just blue, it's not turquoise, it's not lapis, it's actually cerulean. And you're also blithely unaware of the fact that in 2002, Oscar de la Renta did a collection of cerulean gowns, and then I think it was Yves Saint Laurent, wasn't it, who showed cerulean military jackets? I think we need a jacket here. And then cerulean quickly showed up in the collections of 8 different designers. And then it filtered down through the department stores and then trickled on down into some tragic casual corner where you no doubt fished it out of some clearance bin. However, that blue represents millions of dollars and countless jobs. And it's sort of comical how you think that you've made a choice that exempts you from the fashion industry when in fact you're wearing a sweater that was selected for you by the people in this room from a pile of stuff.
While some of the portrayals of Wintour are exaggerated and she suffered from some serious sexism, I mean, you need to check out this 2009 60 Minutes interview sometimes. She's asked twice about being a, quote, bitch, and about all about her clothing allowance. She's also made her fair share of bad choices. It took 30 years into her editorship of Vogue for a black photographer to shoot a cover. It was in 2018, and it was a picture of Beyoncé, who helped choose the photographer. And in the spring of 2020, the publishing giant Condé Nast, where she is chief content officer, was under a lot of scrutiny for its culture. Let's get into our final full bio conversation with Amy O'Dell. For people who never read Vogue, some of them only know of Anna Wintour from The Devil Wears Prada, the book and the film. And the woman who wrote the book, Devil Wears Prada, Anna has claimed not to even remember. What do we know about her? And from your research, what did that movie get right about working for a high-powered, decisive editor-in-chief? And what did it get wrong about an editor-in-chief who's not Anna Wintour, but Anna Wintour?
Yeah. So The Devil Wears Prada was first a novel by a woman named Lauren Weisberger, who was an assistant of Anna's. Anna actually goes through a lot of assistants because a lot of them can't handle the job. It's a really fast-paced, demanding, difficult job. And a lot of young women who have done it couldn't cut it and quickly flamed out. And this is why they have speculated Anna doesn't learn all of her assistants' names because a lot of them don't last. So after they prove themselves, she starts calling them by their name. That is something that is real from the movie. But Lauren Weisberger, she came along and she was not a good fit really because she wanted to be a writer. And being Anna's assistant, even though it's a position at Vogue, it's about being her personal assistant. It's not really about gaining editorial experience at the magazine. And that just kind of made her a bad fit from the beginning. The editors at Vogue never thought that she was such a great writer. She moved on to another magazine. She took a writing class, and that was where she started writing about this fictionalized version of Anna named Miranda Priestley. And that that piece that she wrote for that class is what ultimately became the book, The Devil Wears Prada, and then the film based on the book. When Anna found out that a former assistant was going to write a novel seemingly based strongly on her experiences working for Anna, her reaction was, "I cannot remember who that girl is." The book, of course, is a success. It becomes a film, which is, I would say, a cult classic at this point. But, you know, the movie is really a caricature of her. It's great entertainment. I love the movie. But it's a really one-dimensional view of someone who many people told me is complicated. And when people came to consensus on aspects of Anna's personality like that, that really stood out to me in these separate interviews, because I would ask people, and I interviewed more than 250 people to write this book, many of whom had never spoken on the record about her before, who are close to her. But I would ask people, is she an introvert or an extrovert? Because I was trying to wrap my brain around this person who loves throwing parties and these social pursuits, but also is so reserved and so quiet. And people could not come to consensus on that question. Is she an introvert or is she an extrovert? But they could agree that she is a very complicated person.
It's interesting when you see the movie and when you read your book and even describing the kind of things that assistants are asked to do. They're things that I think for the average Gen Zer would be horrified now of the things that assistants, especially in the 90s and early aughts, were asked to do. Go walk my dog. Go pick up my dry cleaning. Go, you know, fetch my kids' crayons. That kind of thing. Why was that the norm at the time?
Anna did not invent these things.
She's not at all.
She's not the only one. I was told who, for instance, her assistants would go down when her car arrives each morning to the office. An assistant would go down and retrieve the AW bag, which is an L.L. Bean tote bag with navy handles that has papers and the book, which is a dummy copy of the magazine that's in the works, and other stuff in it. And they'll pick it up and they'll carry it upstairs so that Anna doesn't have to carry it. One person said to me, you know, I kind of get it because it's heavy and everyone's always staring at her. But she was actually not the only editor-in-chief who gets stuff like that done. You know, the way I kind of see the way Anna runs her office is she has her assistants do everything that she can think of to have them do so that she can focus as much of her time as possible on her job and on her work that she needs to get done.
Can you pinpoint when Anna Wintour and Vogue became synonymous? She's more than just the editor-in-chief at this point in her career.
You know, I think Anna Wintour and Vogue became synonymous probably even before she was the editor-in-chief of Vogue, because there were so many rumors for so long that she was going to be the editor-in-chief. And, you know, then of course it finally happened. And when it did, because of those rumors, it was such a big deal. She, you know, she was like the queen. One person who worked for both Grace Mirabella and Anna Wintour said that when it happened, when Anna did get the editor-in-chief job, it was like regicide.
Oh my God. My guess is Amy O'Dell. The name of the book is Anna, the Biography, Our Choice for Full Bio. How did Anna Wintour feel about politics? And I ask this because you actually start the book right after the introduction is right after the 2016 election and how she handled the presidency, the election of Donald Trump.
Anna Wintour has been a longtime Democratic supporter. She's raised a lot of money for Democratic candidates. She did so much fundraising that she was actually discussed as a potential ambassador for the Obama administration after the 2012 election. She was never nominated. You know, this was a big story. There were a lot of rumors about this. She was never formally nominated, but she was someone that the administration was looking at. However, it wasn't ever clear to my sources in the administration or to my sources at Condé Nast that she was really interested in that job. And the rumors came back again when Hillary Clinton was running, because Anna did fundraising for Hillary Clinton as well, and through her support behind Hillary, as we had seen her done before. And my sources from Hillary Clinton's team said that, you know, it really was a possibility that Hillary would have nominated her had she won. And, you know, it's unclear still if Anna would have wanted to pursue that. You know, and around the 2012 election, when these rumors were going around, she never brought it up with Cy Newhouse. And then, of course, in 2013, she becomes the artistic director of Condé Nast, giving her purview over almost all the titles at the company. And people in the media industry really thought that that came about because she had used the ambassadorship prospect to negotiate her way into a bigger job. I found no evidence of that. And my sources from Condé Nast said, you know, Cy Newhouse never believed that she would want to take an ambassadorship job and give up the job that she had, because he thought that she thought the job that she had was so, so great.
How did 2020 start out for Anna Wintour? And then what was Vogue's response when the pandemic hit?
Anna was reported to have been dismissive of the pandemic in its earliest days. A fashion week occurs typically for basically the whole month of February. The fashion industry, it goes to shows in New York, London, Milan, and then Paris. So around Paris 2020, so late February, maybe early March, you know, it was becoming clear to the world that the pandemic was very, very serious and that people should not be gathering together in situations like fashion shows. I was told that Anna did take it seriously from the beginning, because Vogue, Anna and her team, they're very close with designers and they kind of know what's going on with their businesses all the time. Anna's always made a point of that. And so, you know, it was a really scary moment for the fashion industry when, you know, buyers pack up and go home and then designers, they're not selling their clothes. So Anna knew that this was happening, and she, according to my sources, like, she knew that this was going to be a big deal and that something bad was, you know, it was going to get really bad. And she set up a fund called A Common Thread with the Council of Fashion Designers of America. And that was meant to raise money to help support designers who were going to have trouble, you know, paying their rent, making payroll because of the pandemic affecting their business. And then things really, really turned for her after the murders of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and the racial reckoning that swept this country and the world. And all of a sudden, you know, we went from seeing Anna quite regularly on Vogue.com and on Vogue's Instagram feed, showing what she was doing in the pandemic, eating muffins that her daughter had made at her Mastic home, jogging for exercise, spending time with her dogs. She's a dog lover. to not seeing her at all. And, you know, Condé Nast experiencing this uprising, first at Bon Appetit, the food title, where people complained of a toxic work environment and people of color not earning the same wages or being treated the same as their white counterparts. And eventually people, that spilled over to speculation about Anna Wintour. You know, here's this woman who has seemed to exclude people of color from both the pages of Vogue and from her staff, because she's someone who hired really for pedigree as much as for ability over the course of her tenure. So that came under very, very harsh scrutiny. And people really thought in the summer of 2020 that Anna was going to lose her job.
After the break, we'll hear about Wintour's relationship with the late Andre Leontali, how she transformed the Met Gala, and how Amy O'Dell was able to write this book, given Anna's power in publishing. That's next. This is All of It. Let's get to the last installment of this month's full bio about Anna Wintour with author Amy O'Dell. Anna, the biography, starts with Wintour's not-so-humble beginnings in London. Through her teen years as an athletic and competitive young woman, her leaving school in the UK to pursue her dream of working in fashion in New York City and the United States. And now we've arrived at a section of the book about her life as a boss and tastemaker. For example, when Apple launched its watch, Apple's chief designer flew to New York City with a watch so Anna Wintour could see it before any tech journalist did. Wintour transformed what was once a staid Upper East Side fundraiser for the Metropolitan Museum of Art into a full-on curated spectacle. Tickets for the Met Gala are reportedly $30,000 each, and a table can be had for $275,000. The event draws politicians and creatives from across the spectrum. Wintour calls the shots on who is invited, where they sit, and a theme to which they should adhere. So with a woman this powerful and this in control of her image, how did Amy O'Dell find enough people to talk on the record for a 400-page book? We'll find out in this, our last installment of Full Bio about Anna Wintour. But first, we begin with Wintour's relationship with the late Andre Leontali, her former collaborator and former friend.
I found it interesting in the book, people who are friends really talk about her as a very loyal friend, a very devoted friend. There's a description of someone on her staff who gets mugged and Anna immediately goes into her purse and gives her money. That if you're inside her inner circle, it's a great place to be. But if you fall outside of it, it can be very chilly. Back to Chilly Charlie. And I was thinking about, because we haven't discussed him, Andre Leontali, his memoir came out in May of 2020, The Chiffon Trenches. And in the book and in things he said that really describe a friendship just gone sour and almost a brokenhearted relationship between the two of them. They shared some of the closest moments. He was with her when, I believe it was her mother died.
Yeah.
She protected his job, even though he might not think so. To me, the whole thing seemed more sad than juicy gossip or spilling tea. Mm-hmm. What was at the core of their friendship and what was at the core of their estrangement?
Anna and Andre first became friends, and according to him, I spoke to him for a long time before he died for the book. According to him, they became fast friends when they were working for Grace Mirabella at American Vogue in the early 80s when Anna was creative director. Anna, it sounded to me, based on my sources, that she wanted Andre to be there and she helped get him a job there. And he worked closely with her on his pages. So he was always kind of her person, even though he didn't realize that she actually got him in. But that kind of made him her person, you know. And he said they were they had a close relationship. He felt he connected with her. He felt like they finished each other's sentences. But Anna is a hard person to get to know. She doesn't reveal a lot. And Andre didn't realize how close she considered him to be to her until she invited him to her wedding. And he shows up and he thinks that he's going to see a ton of people from Vogue there. He thinks he's going to see Grace Mirabella, Alexander Lieberman, all these people. He realizes he is one of only two people, the other being her assistant at the time from American Vogue, who were even invited to her wedding. It was a small, intimate wedding. you know, that really struck me, that that's how he realized that they were as close as they were. And she tried to get him to go to British Vogue when she was editor there. It wasn't right for him to go. So she got him back on her staff when she was at HG. She brought him to American Vogue. But, you know, I think it was that my impression in talking to Andre is that it was that sort of lack of communication that he found to be really, really frustrating. So she really did rely on him. You know, he advised her on her personal wardrobe for many, many years. And she trusted his opinion. She really did. But he was frustrated over the years by, you know, her just not really being forthcoming. And they fell out in more recent years. You know, we're talking about decades of ups and downs in friendship with them, but they fell out, I think, around 2018. Andre Leontali had been hosting the live stream for the Met Gala, which Vogue would run on its website. And I believe it was 2018 or 2019 that they decided to hire a YouTuber to host that live stream instead of having Andre do it. And according to my sources, no one called Andre and told him that this decision was being made. And that really hurt him. And it sounded to me like that was a big reason for this falling out, in addition to this tension that had just kind of built up over the years, you know, him wanting, I think, more warmth from her, more acknowledgement from her than she might have been able to give him or anybody else she thought of as close to her.
My guest is Amy O'Dell. We've been talking about Anna, the biography. It's our choice for full bio. As we wrap up, we have to talk about the Met Gala. Anna Wintour took the Met Gala from sort of a sleepy society event to becoming a global spectacle. I think a lot of people forget that it's actually meant to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
Why has it become as big as it is? How has she managed to reinvent the fundraiser?
Anna took over the Met Gala in 1995, and she was asked to plan it because the Metropolitan Museum of Art basically needed a neutral party within the fashion industry to help raise the funds because, you know, the Costume Institute puts on fashion exhibits. So it would have been seen as a conflict of interest if it was, say, a designer, given, you know, the designer could be seen to influence the exhibits. And it's a big deal to have one's work in a museum collection, right? So she came on after the lead curator had died tragically and suddenly around the time that the lead curator was became sick and died. Anna really wanted to overdrive with the planning of the event. So she initially shared the responsibility with the editor-in-chief of Harper's Bazaar, Liz Tilberis. Liz Tilberis died. The lead curator died, and Anna became a very big force in planning the gala and therefore in the Costume Institute, which is now named for her. And she really did it very methodically over the course of many years with this extreme attention to detail that she has always had from the time she was a young fashion editor, you know, down to like the place settings and the floral arrangements and the ingredients in the food. She, for years, banned chives, onions, garlic, and parsley from being in the food because she believed that they made your breath smell and got stuck in your teeth, and that her guests would not appreciate that. And she made the guest list really more celebrified, which is the same thing that she did with Vogue magazine. And that drew, of course, a lot more attention to the event. If you have, you know, Jennifer Lopez and Sean Combs going as a couple, you know, that's going to draw more attention than having, I don't know, a really big Upper East Side socialite. So she really curated the celebrity guest list. She made it also like really an Instagrammable or photogenic event. You know, if you look at old photos of this party, you see people walking up those steps and they looked, you know, just like the steps that we all know, but it's nighttime. And now there is so carefully laid with sisal carpet, which she will only have sisal carpet, and lined with flowers, and it's beautiful. But it's this attention to detail that really enabled her to grow it and to charge more and more money each year. I think for the most recent event, they were charging around $35,000 a seat. So, you know, the cost of the event goes up every year. That's something that people lamented in the course of my reporting, how much money has to be spent. And, you know, there's danger in having this event inside the museum, because think of all the priceless works of art that are in the museum. And then, you know, Anna wants to turn it into this dramatic event space. That said, she does raise more money each year by making it this huge, extravagant, I would call it the Super Bowl of red carpets.
At the beginning of this conversation, you said that Anna Wintour would like to be remembered for her philanthropy, even more so than her editorial work. What has she left behind? What has her philanthropic footprint been?
So Anna has raised more than $250 million for the Costume Institute through the Met Gala. She's been involved in other charitable causes over the course of her career as well. She raised money for AIDS in the 90s through Seventh on Sale. And that was a big deal at the time, because that was a cause that was seen as, or I guess you could say it was seen as controversial, because AIDS was associated with gay men. And some Vogue advertisers didn't want to go near that, but she did it anyway. And she raised a lot of money for AIDS. She's also raised money for youth mental health, and for breast cancer. But her biggest fundraising haul has been for the Costume Institute at the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
How did you, Amy, get to report this book? How did Anna Wintour let you report this book? I'm kind of serious. Yeah. I am serious. She knows everybody in this town and beyond. And I think this is actually a very fair book. It's not hagiography. You point out her failures and her weak spots. How did you report this book?
Reporting this book was really, really difficult. And I had many moments along the way where I thought I wasn't going to be able to do it. And that's because when I first started, people hung up on me. They didn't want to talk to me. They felt loyalty to Anna, and they didn't want to do it, many of them, unless she said it was okay. When I got a lot of no's, like weeks of no's, I thought, okay, well, how am I going to get this done? So I went back to the very beginning of her life, thinking that people who knew her a very long time ago, Anna's 72 years old. So thinking if I go back, you know, 60 years, people might be more willing to talk to me. And that proved to be a good strategy. So I went back to the beginning and I worked my way forward. And eventually Anna did find out I was working on the book, and I had a conversation with her representative. And I had interviewed at this point more than 100 people, and I had been working on it for more than a year. So I'd made a lot of progress. And the result of the conversation was that her office sent over a list of names of close friends and colleagues for me to interview about her. There were a few other people who I asked for her to sanction to talk to me, who I knew were very close to her and surely wouldn't do it otherwise. I suspect that some people back-channeled and asked her permission when I approached them. But I did talk to people who really are in her inner circle, who know her very, very well, who had never talked about her in this way before. And, you know, the fact that she sanctioned these people to talk to me, she didn't stand in the way of anybody I wanted to talk to. You know, that did seem like an endorsement of the project to me.
Amy O'Dell's book is called Anna, the Biography. It was our choice for Full Bio. Amy, thank you for giving us so much time.
Oh my God. No, thank you for doing this. I really appreciate you covering the book, and I loved your questions. I got to talk about things that I haven't been able to talk about in any other interview.
Thanks again to Amy O'Dell for her time. Her book, Anna, the biography, is available at your favorite indie bookseller. And thanks to Full Bio engineer Jason Isaac and Full Bio post producer Simon Close.
Brando, Jimmy Dean, on the cover of a magazine.